And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. What determines what is right or wrong? Well, there are only so many choices that exist to try to answer this question. First, human beings are the source. Human beings decide what is right and wrong. However, there's a problem with just letting the general population make this determination. Pardon me. For example, one is pro-life. Another person is pro-abortion. Who's right? How do we determine who is right? How do we make laws regarding this? If our sole authority is human beings, how are we going to figure out what is right and what is wrong? There's no kind of unanimity. Should laws prohibit or permit the practice? And the same, by the way, is true with any other issue. Take any controversial issue there has been on the subject of morality, and you will find that there are people for it and people against it. So human beings are not going to have any kind of resolution to the matter. What they will have is chaos. Well, a second possibility is, well, let's just leave it up to nature. The problem with that is nature has no ability to make moral judgments. You've probably been in a forest, maybe out in the country, maybe played a golf course and got familiar with all the woods in the area. There's no moral judgment in all of those things. You may have been out on the ocean. What moral judgment does the ocean make? None at all. So there's really nothing to do in leaving it to nature, because nature is just nature. It doesn't make moral judgments. It's not a moral individual or being. The third thing is that morality can come from an unbiased, objective source. And that's what we need to define morality. As we just looked in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verses 1 through 4, and of course it goes on down to the rest of the Ten Commandments through verse 17, the Jews knew where their morality came from. After God spoke this law to them, they knew that an objective source had revealed to them his morality. And so they didn't have to wonder, well, is idolatry right or wrong? Is killing right or wrong? Is adultery right or wrong? They didn't have to make those determinations because God made that determination for them. Now, that's the problem that is highlighted in New Age morality. It's also highlighted in any other way you want to look at it, but our subject has been to give an answer regarding New Age ideology. New Age religion is very popular, and so we had a question concerning that, and there are various aspects we have to deal with. We dealt with some last week, the fact that it is monistic, all is one and one is all. It is pantheistic, all is God and God is all. But as we move into the area of morality, This is where we are. Now, this also applies in things totally unrelated to New Age, but that's the context we're looking at it in this morning. So it's a battle between subjective and objective thinking. Does each individual get to decide what is moral? Or is there an objective source, such as God, who has delivered it to us? And of course, we know that the latter is true. New Ageism, however, is subjective. It does not possess a moral code. You can read through the writings of the various people involved in it, and you won't find a moral code. It doesn't concern itself with morality. Like the atheist, the New Age person is adrift in a sea of uncertainty. He has nowhere to drop anchor because, first of all, he doesn't believe in anchors. And second, he would not be able to tell a safe haven from a pirate cove. He just doesn't have the ability to discern these things. So in a nutshell, everything is permitted. Everything is permitted. After all, a system that emphasizes create your own reality invites the corollary, create your own morality. Now, in a July 1st, 1986 Dallas Morning News article, it described a meeting of 150 Seth devotees. They came together to bend spoons. Yeah, that's why they met. That's why they came together. And that typifies this philosophy. One of them said, "We literally create our own reality through the beliefs we hold. So by changing those beliefs, we can change reality." Now, that may sound quite sophisticated and appealing to some people, but it's nothing but a philosophical error. You cannot create reality. Jesus pronounced Peter blessed not because he created reality, but because he recognized the reality of Jesus' deity in Matthew 16, 13 through 19. Jesus did not praise Peter for inventing this idea, but for recognizing the truth of the matter. On the day of judgment, nobody is going to be allowed to say, "This is not my reality. Please excuse me." No, God will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained, Jesus Christ, Acts chapter 17 and verse 31. He will do that judgment whether we are prepared for it or not. Undoubtedly, the rich man wished he could create his own reality when he woke up in torments, Luke chapter 16, but he was not afforded that kind of privilege. No one is. When will people learn the difference between playing fanciful games of a speculative nature and the truth? So what kind of morality do New Agers possess? While it would be presumptuous to speak for each and every one of them, nevertheless, it is instructive to say what some of its most popular adherents believe. Randall Bear, for example, was once a strong proponent of New Ageism, but he saw the errors of the way and decided to give it up, and he wrote about New Ageism. He wrote these words, "I often came across New Age parents who either didn't live with their children or who had left them. Often the parents did so out of preference, not necessity. When one is so busy exploring his own glorious potential, kids just get in the way. Anyone who reads Shirley MacLaine's books know that she feels free to use foul language, to blaspheme, to engage in fornication. Many attend New Age workshops, in fact, on weekends, not just to receive new knowledge, but also to find casual sex partners, as Baer also writes. Divorce is not uncommon either among New Age people. After all, some reason, well, we've probably worked through our karma together. Now it's time to move on to another karmic relationship. We'll, Lord willing, take a look more at that next week about karma and reincarnation and some of the things that New Age people believe regarding that. Baer's personal assessment of New Age marriages is that they are often unstable and unfulfilling, with a divorce rate that is unusually high. There is no real basis in New Age thinking to condemn homosexuality or bisexuality or any other perversion as the Bible defines it, because they just may be creating their own morality. Perhaps an attraction to a particular gender has simply accompanied someone to this incarnation. Maybe that's based on a past incarnation. It's a wonder that nobody has tried to make the argument that his past life experience makes a homosexual what he is. I'm surprised nobody'd come out with that, because it certainly fits their thinking. As for abortion, there won't be many New Age people lining up on the picket line to protest abortion. Again, Baer says this, "For if a soul is immortal and continuously reincarnates, then abortion is no problem, because that soul will simply recycle itself into another body at some later time, no harm done." So they're probably not going to take a stand against abortion. Now, this kind of attitude may offend many sensitive souls, but New Ageism represents a brand of fatalism which concludes that whatever happens is meant to be. That's what karma is all about. Your karma is just being worked out, and cosmic justice is being served. Once again, how does the earth, how does the cosmos, how do the stars and the planets, how did they get justice? Where did that come from? How are they able to bring that about? Those are some questions I don't see anybody answering from the New Age movement. Whatever goes awry in this life will be worked out in the next one. Someone trying to comprehend reincarnation as it relates to abortion might well ask, because some of the New Age proponents say that a child, a spirit, may select its parents. It's not, we got this child physically, or no, somebody was saying, I want those parents. So the question would be, why would a disembodied spirit choose a mother or a family that would kill it before it ever had the opportunity to advance spiritually? That doesn't make any sense. Doctrines such as this can be reduced to an absurdity, and of course, no one should hold to something that is absurd. Someone might protest that these observations about New Age morality are just opinion. Well, no, we can go to the source of these things and find out exactly what they believe. Let's consider the, quote, knowledge of the ascended master Ramtha, who channels bits of spiritual knowledge through California housewife J.Z. Knight. Now, this is an ancient warrior who has all of this knowledge and insight to tell people through this woman who claims to get these messages. Ramtha taught these things in a book published in 1987 called Voyage to the New World. Here's one of the statements. Relinquish guilt. Do not live by rules. Live by feelings. Does that sound like Exodus chapter 20? I don't see God saying that to Israel, do you? Live by feelings. I'm going to give you 10 rules, but just don't pay any attention to them. Live by your feelings. No, this is actual New Age theology. Now, this actually is probably the dominant theology of today, so New Age fits right in. A lot of people believe this anyway. But it is and does typify New Age thinking and morality, which has no use for strict statements that are found in the scriptures, such as flee fornication. You won't find that in New Age thinking, 1 Corinthians 6:18. Or, therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Matthew 19 and verse 6. You won't find anything rigid like that in New Age thinking. Certainly, New Agers are not interested in the list of sins that we find in Galatians 5:19-21, or in any other passage where there's a collection of them, Romans 2:28-32, 1 Corinthians 6:9-10, Revelation 21:8, and so on. In fact, sin for them is not even a valid concept. Ramtha says there is no such thing as evil. Does that sound dangerous to you? There is no such thing as evil. And Shirley MacLaine's higher self confirms this doctrine. Her higher self said, until mankind realizes that there is in truth no good and there is in truth no evil, there will be no peace. And with this philosophy, we have a lot of peace, do we? I don't see any of it. Living by feelings means basically doing your own thing, to borrow a phrase from the 60s. Living by feelings means doing that which is right in your own eyes. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own sight. Judges 21:25. The only problem with that is, as Jeremiah 10:23 says, it is not in man who walks to direct his steps. The way of man is not in himself. We can't go by our feelings. There is a way which seems right to man, but the end thereof is the way of death. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12. Furthermore, he who trusts in his own heart is a fool. Proverbs 28, 26. So much for going by our feelings. Besides, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 9. However, Ramtha foolishly states, for 2,000 years we have been called sinful creatures, but we are all equal with Christ, God and Christ. We're all equal. The Jews determined to kill Jesus when he made that statement. Remember John chapter 5, verse 18. Therefore, the Jews sought the more to kill him because he said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. So they wanted to kill him. Well, isn't this basically saying the same thing? When Jesus admitted to being the Christ, the Son of the Blessed, in Mark 14, 61 and 62, they accused him of blasphemy and delivered him up to Pilate to be crucified. Jesus was not guilty of charged because he spoke the truth. He was the Word made flesh. But any human being who would make such claims today is guilty of blasphemy. We are not God. We are not equal with God. Some brethren would probably enjoy Ramtha's plan of evangelism. Do not preach to this world. The world doesn't need saving. Leave it alone. The world does need saving. And especially people like this who write such things are in desperate need of salvation, though they know it not. This advice is, of course, directly opposite to the one that God gave, the one that Jesus gave to his apostles in Matthew 28, verses 19 and 20. New Ageism is not concerned with the salvation of men's souls or moral reformation. The church needs to be careful and ask itself, whose commands are we most closely following, Ramtha's or the Lord's? Ramtha has advanced the "you don't have the right to judge me" spirit of this age to the next level. God has never judged you or anyone, Ramtha says. Perhaps he might check the Akashic records for information about the flood. Almost every civilization has that account in some form or another. It may involve less people or more people, a greater length of time, a shorter period of time, a huge boat, a small boat, but there is an account of a flood in all civilizations that we are aware of. The whole point is God does judge people for their behavior. You cannot read the book of Judges, Kings, or Chronicles, not to mention Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, to know that God punishes sin. Why all those warnings to keep them from being punished? God punishes sin. But according to New Ageism, God is not allowed to either define or punish sin. A precedent he set, by the way, with Adam and Eve in the garden. How can you get as far as Genesis 3 and not realize that God punishes sin? And also that we will all stand before the judgment seat of Christ to be judged, to give an account for the things done in our body, whether they be good or evil. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. Ramtha has tapped into another popular idea of our culture by seeking to do away with all ultimate punishment and even the concept of immortality. No, there is no hell and there is no devil, Ramtha confidently assures people falsely. No one will tremble when they hear this message like Felix did when Paul spoke to him of the judgment to come, Acts 24 and verse 25. The devil is not really evil because he is really God. Who else would he be? It's hard to imagine anybody more twisted in their thinking than Ramtha or Jay-Z Knight, who reportedly channels him. What do we read in the scriptures? Woe unto them that call good evil and evil good, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, bitter for sweet, sweet for bitter. Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20. With such a topsy-turvy ideology, is it any wonder that moral principles are absent in New Age thinking? But the worst moral philosophy that I have ever seen is yet to come. In an article about Shirley MacLaine called Isness Is Her Business, Martin Gardner apparently quotes her as saying, if it isn't her, it's somebody who agrees with her, but I think it's her, every vile and wretched thing you do broadens your understanding. If you want to do any one thing, regardless of what it is, it would not be wise to go against that feeling. For there is an experience awaiting you and a grand adventure that will make your life sweeter. Really, the experience awaiting the practitioner of this practice is probably called trial by jury and imprisonment. What sin, even the most heinous one, does this statement not justify? It justifies anything a person might want to do. Did not Jonadab play the role of Ramtha as he counseled Amnon on how to violate his sister Tamar? Now, this is not the Tamar Connor was talking about. That's in Genesis. This is the one that we find in 2 Samuel 13, verses 3 through 5. There is no evil, no devil, no judgment, no hell, and I not only can, but should do every vile and wretched thing, regardless of what it is, in order to make my life sweeter, have I not justified rape, incest, child molestation, and even murder? If not, why not? You know, there may be some people, even in the New Age movement, that are shocked by this, and who might protest and say, wait a minute, we don't agree with that. Maybe not, but that's because a lot of people who are New Age were brought up with Christian values. And they know because of what they've been taught from their youth upwards that some of these things are wrong. But this philosophy does allow for these things. There's no way around it. I've created my own truth. In my reality, I do not count anything I do as wrong or immoral. There is no evil. But let's pose a question. Suppose Mr. New Ager, one of your followers who agrees with your philosophy, wants your wife. Now, he has no right to her, and she doesn't want him, but why should he deny himself a sweet experience? He'll just wait until you leave her alone and then force himself upon her. Now, Mr. New Ager, you wouldn't call the police, would you? He's just working out his karma and maybe hers. If you counter that his actions were wrong and violent, as the scriptures, which you reject, teach, he will just say, so what? That's just your truth, and you shouldn't try to impose your morality on me. Or suppose you have a son. Some perverted men like youths. Maybe a guy is a charter member of NAMBLA, North America Man Boy Love Association. He may invite your son over after school in order to play a little game with him. You wouldn't report him, would you? Maybe the lad chose you as a parent knowing that you would help him survive the experience. Maybe the two of them have a past karma that just needs a little more work. Besides, he claims to be God. What right do you have to criticize a fellow deity, according to this theology? Suppose one person kills another. Would the victim's blood, like Abel's, cry out from the ground? Or would it just sigh, oh, well, that's karma? The point of all these scenarios is that theoretically, a person might do anything that enters his mind if he really follows the precepts of New Ageism, because its main goal is to exalt self. It is the amusing Raphtha, as Shirley MacLaine calls him, who encourages people, love yourself, live in the moment, and exalt all that you are. Now, to become enlightened is to make the priority of enlightenment first, the priority of love of self first. The Bible, at every turn, tries to take people outside of themselves, not exalt themselves. It declares that our first obligation is God. You shall love the Lord your God, not yourself. The Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. This is the first and great commandment. We are not equal to God. Our ways and our thoughts are not his thoughts. They are higher than ours. Isaiah 55 verses 8 and 9. He is our creator and worthy of our praise and our adoration. Human beings are next to show love and concern toward others. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Matthew 22:39. Let's take a look at Romans chapter 13, verses 8 through 10. Again, this does not encourage exalting self. Notice what it says. Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. And so that is a passage to remember. One other one, and there are many, many more, but this is fairly brief. From 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24, let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. We're not supposed to be stuck on ourselves. We're not supposed to be stuck in ourselves. We are to seek what is best for others. You could add 1 Thessalonians 5:15 to that and many other scriptures. Even the commands given to husbands and wives, children and parents, servants and masters are aimed at what? What we owe others. Not what we can expect to receive from others. What we owe others. New Ageism, on the other hand, puts human beings at the pinnacle of the universe, equal with God, who is everything. New Agers are devoted to the thrilling pursuit of self. There can be little room for seeking the welfare of others when the subject of a person's veneration and worship is himself rather than God. New Age morality can be accurately summed up by asking one question: what morality? There is no morality. So, how do we know what is right and what is wrong? We don't know it subjectively, because we're all in disagreement on that. We don't know it through nature or the cosmos, because it's not a sentient being. We know what's right and wrong because God, who created us, has told us and revealed to us what is right and what is wrong. The philosophy of New Ageism is, I want. It's kind of like a little kid who never grew up. I want, I want. And it's all about the self. But it should be about God. Who determines right and wrong? God determines what is right and wrong. On the day of Pentecost, Peter preached the truth concerning salvation. They recognized, men and brethren, what shall we do? They weren't standing there saying, we need to explore ourselves internally more because we're not there yet. No, they recognized they had done objective moral wrong, and they wanted to know what was objectively, morally right. And that's what Peter told them. Repent and be baptized. Every one of you, not some of you, every one of you. In the name of Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of sins. The Bible is not presented as some sort of nebulous, whatever you think is right thing. That doesn't come from the scriptures. It reveals right and wrong, truth and error. And it calls us people who have committed sin. And it gives a solution to sin. And there are choices you must make that involve the heart, the soul, the mind, your life, all of these things. And there is how to remove sin, and that involves the blood of Christ. It is only, his blood only removes sin when you are baptized, just as Peter told the group on Pentecost. You are to repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of sins. That's the message. Baptism does also now save us, Peter also said in 1 Peter 3 and verse 21. So, don't be taken captive by a vain philosophy that may sound interesting, that may sound like something you've never heard of before. No, follow what comes from God, from the Holy Scriptures. If there's any way we can help anyone to do that this morning, we invite you to let us know. If there's anybody watching online, we would be glad to talk to you either over the phone, email, or if the day ever comes, personally, and study what the Bible actually says. This is not my opinion. This is not your opinion. This is what God has revealed to us. And we'll be glad to study with you the way of salvation that God devised. If there's any way we can help anyone this morning, in spiritual matters, let us know while we stand and sing number 626.